count for each and every one of you to decide whether you are going to be the problem or whether you are going to be the solution.
That's right.
You must choose, brothers, you must choose. It takes 5 seconds, 5 seconds of decision, 5 seconds to realize your purpose here on the planet. It takes 5 seconds to realize that it's time to move. It's time to get down with it. Brothers, it's time to testify, and I want to know, are you ready to testify? Are you ready? I give you a testimonial, the MC family.
At the beginnings of a lot of the songs on this live 1969 recording of Detroit punk pioneers MC5, you'll hear the voice of an ecstatic brother J.C. Crawford. Crawford is credited inside the album as the band's religious leader and spiritual advisor. Crawford's real name is David Franks, and now, 35 years later, the performer's resume is a bit longer. Franks is now also an accomplished performance poet, published writer, and tireless musical composer. He graduated from the Hopkins Writing Seminars in 1969 and went on to further studies at Harvard, Berkeley, and at the University of New Mexico under the mentorship of poet Robert Creeley. During the next half hour, we'll be getting to know David Franks through a number of his original musical and poetic compositions. The projects we're about to hear differ greatly from one another on the surface, but behind them all, certain commonalities unite the works and shed some light on the enigmatic mind that's created them.
Sometimes I say I'm not a particularly good composer, but I'm a good speller. So that I like to use words that spell out melody lines.
Franks completed the composition Musical Words in 1990. He conceived of the piece as a marrying of music and poetry. The chord progressions in the composition's 5 movements are a form of tonal Morse code, an encrypted language based on the 7 letters of the alphabet that correspond to the musical scale.
In the first movement, I use 2 words, B-A-B-E, babe, and D-E-A-D, dead. And in 5 movements, they go through each other so that in the 5th movement, which they're singing, and these are harmonics, so they're singing chords rather than note by note. It spells out B-A-B-E-D-E-A-D. Now, the 2nd movement is where it gets to the interest in language acquisition or infantile utterance, so to speak. The melody line, improbably, is made up of the chords D-E-A-D, dead, and the lyric is approximations of those sounds which infants make when their needs are not gratified. So it starts almost from the most dismal possibilities, you know, from going for this alchemy from lead and trying to make something shiny, like a work of art or a song, or in this case, a lullaby.
Thank you.
third movement, I needed to get somehow to a happy ending, and DEAD is not the way to get to a happy ending. So I took the first movement, which is the choir. I copied down the chords in reverse order and then turned the whole manuscript page just upside down, so I had inside out music, and wrote that out for string quartet. The unusual thing about that string quartet is that I wanted to conduct it at heartbeat. And heartbeat is very much too slow for two violins, a cello, and viola to hold together. So we had the introduction, as you'll hear, as a piano. The last movement, and this is finally the happy ending, the melody line is made up of variations of B-A-B-E, babe, and the lyric is composed of sounds, approximations of sounds, because adult is singing them, that infants make when their needs are gratified, when they're most at peace. And they are the open throat back vowel sounds, a-o-u, the nursing sounds, p-b-m, and the dental sounds, duh, tuh. I'd like to take the liberty of reading the lyrics to that final lullaby. Pa, 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 da, 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 pa, I like to think of those as my most mature lyrics. Birthdays and holidays. Mother, father, sister, brother, all that hope, all that history. For many years, I wanted to look like my father. People said I looked more like my mother. My mother thinks I look like her father. Scatter photographs, summers at the beach, dead uncles, dying aunts, in a trunk, in a box, in a book. Birthdays and holidays. Cousin's wedding in Massachusetts, Chicago, no, San Diego, on whose side? Oh, yes, birthdays and holidays. Do you want to invite them to your house? They never visit me. Maybe we could go there. It's almost Mother's Day. What are you going to get Mother? Father's Day is Sunday. What are you going to get Father, Sister, Brother, birthdays, and holidays. I stopped drinking. Why don't you change jobs? Yes, I'm learning to fly. Father doesn't look so well as can be expected. The weather's getting better. Their anniversary. Mother called. Birthdays and holidays. I hate Christmas. I'm going home for Christmas. I don't think the relationship will change. Before I die, I'd like to see what did Mother say. There's not much more we can do at this point, Father said. Remember your dog, my dog. That was my room. We used to live there. Mother, father, sister, brother, birthdays, holidays.
David Franks reading his poem Birthdays and Holidays, published in the anthology American Poets Say Goodbye to the 20th Century, edited by Andre Codrescu and Laura Rosenthal. The musical accompaniment is David Franks' original composition, Musical Words, conducted and arranged by Richard Lake, with vocalists Alita Green, Richie Havens, Emmylou Harris, Bob Brown, and Jackie Oldham. You're listening to an exploration of the original musical and poetic creations of Baltimore's David Franks.
Frozen Tears. It's spelled out with a comma between every letter, like F, comma R, comma O, comma Z, comma, and so forth, because the commas themselves look like tears as well. So I like to leave the visual aspect in music as well and words to tell their own story.
Franks has been working on this musical composition, Frozen Tears, for 2 years. The letters of the musical scale, A through F, have proved limiting as he's attempted to encode more complex poetry into his musical scores. His fusing of melody and alphabet has had to mutate.
Unlike Babe and Dead, they do not fit into the traditional musical scale because you have a T that's not A through G, and you have a R and an S. So what I did is to take our old friend Julie Andrews and that earlier form of the scale, do, re, a female deer, like that, so that you have T equals a B, E, A from the regular scale, re is a D, and so is a G. So tears spells out B-E-A-D-G. And so all of the bells you hear in this piece, all of the voices you hear in this piece, even the raindrops and the bubbles are fashioned to spell out tears, even though you don't see that. But they are repeating in one way or another those words, tears, 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 over and over again. It's funny, if you swim a while, those people that do, and you float on your back and you put your head underwater, you'll hear your brain and not with any chatter left in it. And it sounds exactly, for those of you who've been in a forest at night, that very same musical soft sound you'll hear, you know, in a forest with the crickets, with a different insect. And that's exactly how our mind sounds. So there's a music, there's so many musics that haven't been tapped. And so the it's there and everywhere else about us.
David Franks has saved a jar of his own tears, which he keeps in his freezer. It's traveled with him from home to home for years, across four different state lines. It became sort of a persistent wish of his, and a baffling one, to somehow convert human tears into music. One day, Franks had a revelation, namely that tears have a physical inverse. He happened upon an article published by Johns Hopkins professor Andreas Prosperetti, a man who had devoted his life to the study of bubbles, and who had discovered that, underwater, bubbles make their own precise music at an octave above and an octave below middle C. Franks tracked down the professor, and before he knew it, he found himself on a ship in the Pacific Ocean off the coast of California with Prosperetti's colleague, an underwater acoustic specialist named Michael Buckingham.
What they would do is take underwater microphones from a ship and bounce them off an object on the ocean floor, and then they would come up with color values on the computers on the top of the ships. And so he went under and recorded the bubbles for me in La Jolla. And then he sent me to a friend of his, Jeff Nystuen, who spends his life not with bubbles, but with raindrops. And he can tell by the size of raindrops and the dispersion of raindrops, global climatic changes, among other things. So he, again, very generously recorded underwater the raindrops during a sudden summer thunderstorm. And so that those had great musical elements in them. And so then I had my three source sounds. My wish above all is conceptual uniqueness, and it's been to fashion a music out of the sound of three water traps, tears, bubbles, and raindrops. Women tend to have this great gift of being able to cry not only in crisis situations, but as a cleansing mechanism, a sweet rush of tears that cleanses. And so when I would hear that, I would always be envious, and you could hear not just the wailing of the crying, but very small sounds with catches in the throat, and that those sounds always interested me. If you can imagine a stencil, that I would write out the shape of each of the letters, like an F and an R and an O and a Z and so forth, and fill them with the sounds of women weeping, raindrops recorded underwater during a sudden summer thunderstorm, and bubbles recorded under the ocean by hydrophones. Those were the three source sounds, these trapped gases, these liquids. I have been working actually for about 2 years, and this piece is in its entirety is about 13 minutes and 6 seconds long. I know it's interesting. I know nobody's made anything like it, but the point is, how am I going to get something like this melodic enough so that it will bear repeated listening? Because I have a very melodic ear, and unless somebody wants to hear things over again, they're really not going to get to the levels of invention that are there be revealed. Emotionally, I think that besides the melody is that only the emotion endures, and do you having these frozen tears, these tears and bubbles and raindrops locked up inside of letters, inside of words, like our hearts are so often limited to what we can speak about. And we've all known how those words are just bursting at the seams to try to mirror our emotions, and I'm hoping musically it'll have that same effect.
David Frank's composition, Frozen Tears, with assistance by recordists Michael Buckingham and Jeff Nystuen, and sound designers Joe Wall and David Crandall. You're listening to an exploration of the music and poetic creations of Baltimore's David Franks. In 1983, Franks was living in a harborfront apartment in Baltimore's Fells Point neighborhood. Outside his window, the horns and whistles of tugboats were as incessant as the police sirens and street sounds that make up the white noise of city life.
I had been living at 910 Fell Street And I had this apartment where there's a large roof going out to the edge of the water. And at that time, there were two tugboat companies, Baker Whiteley and now it's still Moran. And so that the Baker Whiteley fleet were right at the edge of that roof, and so that they were part of my everyday reality. The musicality of that and the textures in those horns and whistles and the pathos almost in them too, as well as this chirping sound, which undercut that with almost maybe a cartoon lively quality, those textures started to be apparent to me. The concept of whistling in the dark was to use great ingenuity and time-consuming labor to end up at the same place I began with a loss of quality. I needed access to the boats and for them to demonstrate, okay, what do you have here? And then I had to consider musically what could be done with these relatively, from really the deepest ones, which are the foghorns, to the most soprano or the strident ones, which are almost like penny whistles in a sense. And so I had a limited range, but I wanted to make it into sounding as orchestral, really, and symphonic as I could make it. When I was given the opportunity to lead these fleets of tugboats, I wrote out tone clusters for their horns and whistles. I rehearsed these very patient tugboat captains. And I started off with one movement with seven boats where they played out seven different tone clusters. I then rehearsed them to play the second movement in reverse order.
Franks has entitled this work Whistling in the Dark, a non-futile exercise in futility. The third and final movement of this piece is actually the first, recorded, and then played back as a second generation of the original sound.
And because of the regeneration of the recording, we lost a little bit of quality. So therefore, I had ended up in the same place I began with a lack of quality. So it was a non-futile exercise in futility. It's a curious thing that something that might be considered only noise could bring the exact opposite effect when it's heard in a different context as music.
David Frank's 1983 composition, Whistling in the Dark, with credits to Baker Whiteley's Manuel Alvarez for providing access to the tugboats. You're listening to an exploration of the music and poetic creations of Baltimore's David Franks. Franks' aesthetic exploration of everyday sounds has taken him into sometimes sublime musical territory, but it has at points dragged him with equal force into realms of the utterly distasteful. Around the year 2000, Franks began making a series of disturbing recordings under the pseudonym Davis Black. The tapes were eventually discovered by the legendary radio producer Joe Frank. A collaboration followed, and the fruits were aired on the late-night radio program After Dark.
Now, here's the thing now. I deal in mysticism. I'm the Maharishi Ottar, born under the sign of Aquarius, Egyptus of the Nile. I bring back dead people. Is there anybody dead that you would like to bring back? Anybody at all?
No.
In New Orleans, people would call me up, as they do anywhere, and sometimes be the wrong number. And so usually you just say, well, this is a wrong number, and they say, I said, no problem, you know, and you let them go courteously. But then I was of a mind to keep people on the boat.
What I do is I usually meet with about five or six people. We go into a dark room and put our hands on the table, say the Lord's Prayer, and we bring back the spirits. Is there anybody dead you would like to have back?
Mm-mm. I'm scared of spirits.
I can't hear you.
I say I'm scared of spirits.
Now, it's nothing to be scared of. The Lord sanctions spirits. It's a friendly seance.
Mm-mm. Spirits is the devil work.
What?
Spirits is the devil work, because dust you come and dust you go.
After
you're dead, you know nothing, you hear nothing, no, you see nothing.
I had this one woman named Alice, and she would call me first on a Sunday, and she would say, well, you know, are you going to church? And I had no idea who Alice was. And so I said, well, Alice, I don't know. Will you sing for me? And she sang for me, and we got in the habit of talking every Sunday so that I would get an idea of Alice and people at her church, and so that I met a couple people at her church. And then I would call up and invite members of her church to really wacky seances.
Have you ever seen a spirit?
No.
You want to?
No.
What?
No.
Why?
I just don't want to see none. I have no reason to want to see.
Madam, can I come over to your house tonight?
No.
I want to come over and talk to you and bring a spirit along with me.
Well, you leave that spirit where it at and you stay where you at.
But it's not a mean spirit.
I don't want no kind of spirit.
Franks actually worked as a telephone psychic for a while in the early 90s. It was more an economic decision than a career wish at the time. He had had to give up a good teaching position and artist residency at Illinois State University in order to return to Baltimore and help his mother care for his ailing father. Franks ended up taking the phone psychic job and found himself in a surreal work environment surrounded by coworkers who took their calls very seriously.
They would have all kinds of stones, they would have tea leaves, they would have crystals, and so forth. So their lives were totally engaged with this new age forms of healing, and tarot decks, various kinds of tarot decks. And my only exposure was because I had studied Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, and that was, there's an astrolabe at the beginning, and my teacher anyway described how they moved in the different tales from one tale to another on the basis of astrology, of where the houses were located, because that was the dominant system at the time. So I knew the tarot from that and a little bit from the Kabbalah. So that I started with only that knowledge.
Tell me about this big thrill.
Well, it was a sensation that came over me after he came running down the escalator to me.
This was a sensation that came over to you after he ran down the escalator?
Yeah, and he came and stood by my side, and he surprised me, but he made me happy.
He surprised you, but he made
you. And I had a big thrill from it.
How did he make you happy?
I became really adept at it, so I would have big tables spread out, so I'd have, you know, William Burroughs and Aleister Crowley, and I would just do it freeform.
Well, let me see what I'm seeing at the center. What I'm seeing at the center is the Seven of Cups.
Mm-hmm.
And there are seven cups. They're golden cups. In one cup there's a blue viper.
Blue viper, what's that?
And another cup there...
That's something evil?
Well, not evil is, you know, that's, we can talk about that, but there's also, there's a man or a woman in this other cup, but you can't tell whether it's a man or a woman. Their arms are outstretched, but there's a red light emanating from them.
He wants to hug me?
Oh, he wants to hug you.
Yeah, they were lost, and they were lost about the same kinds of things that most of us are lost about. Usually, the main topics were if you were lovelorn, if your heart had been broken, or you wanted to know if somebody would love you. Those that was one of the main subjects, so that was certainly, I'm always thinking about that.
But then there's another cup, and it has these gems in it. There's red, and they're yellow and blue and white, and they're very, very, they're sparkling. But they look more like they're semi-precious or costume jewelry, even though they're sparkling rather than...
Maybe he's going to give me jewelry.
Well, maybe, but this card indicates there's a lot of fantasy.
A lot of fantasy surrounding it?
Yeah, a lot of illusion.
Yeah, illusion, I would say.
Yeah.
I was wanting to debunk all of the crystals, all of the New Age, put it to the level of comedy, so that's one edge of it. But of course, the shared humanity and pain was something I couldn't not identify with.
How old are you?
I'm 59, but I don't look my age. Some man on the phone the other night told me he thought I was 26.
Do you look around 26?
Yeah, I look around 26. I don't have any wrinkles or anything.
Yeah.
And I'm very young looking. And
you look half your age.
I don't have, yeah.
That's amazing. What do you attribute your youthful looks to?
Is it just pain and suffering?
Pain and suffering?
Pain and suffering.
And that, how does that keep you youthful?
That's how they talk about Elizabeth Taylor. She suffers so much pain, yet she's still beautiful. You know that?
I didn't know that.
You know how beautiful she is
today?
Oh,
yes, my God, yes.
Yes, well, she suffered an awful lot. And she once said that it was all the suffering she had to go through that makes her look the way she does.
God.
You're listening to an exploration of the music and poetic creations of Baltimore's David Franks. Recently, Franks has had occasion to reflect on his meandering creative path, to look at what he's accomplished over the years, and to assess his progress as an artist and a person.
I don't know that I'm anywhere new, so I don't know how to judge that. I mean, you think that you reach, as you get older, you know, and more behind you, that you're in some better place or mature place or wiser place, but I see no evidence of progress, because in that way, I don't feel any sense of age in that way. But of course, because what I have been doing, I don't know if you want to get into this, but for the last 8 months, I've been battling advanced cancer with most aggressive forms of chemotherapy and radiation. But I've had dramatic reversals, so that brings elements of faith and prayer into the whole medical mix. And of course, there's an interesting thing that happens, because you see that maybe you will or you may well not have the life that you had projected, or the automatic longevity. But even given that, I mean, the urge then is to work faster and do more. But I don't know that that's possible. I think if you're there every day, and sometimes sitting down is just the hardest part of it, and being there, then things will happen. If you are an artist, they will happen, but maybe not in the time that you can will upon them.
David Frank's newest musical composition is the most ambitious and complex of his career. He's calling it Sunday Morning Bells, and although the piece has already been written, the negotiations for the actual performance are only just beginning.
A whole city, Baltimore, to make one song of unity, praise, and joy as a city. And this would involve all the churches in the city, from the uttermost reaches of the city into the center, which I'm considering the Washington Monument, where Peabody is. I'll be working with the different notes of the chords and having the different churches spell out the word B-A-B-E for the baby Jesus, and also just for an uplifting sense of rebirth. At the peripheries of the city before dawn, you would hear these bells one morning, and gradually it would start slowly to fill the whole city. So depending on where you were, you might hear the sweetness of bells in the morning. And then as it filled the skies from the whole city, from every church, in one song of unity, praise, and joy, it may be a great cacophony. I'm not claiming that this would cure everything in the city, in a fractured city like almost every city in America, but would be a huge gesture which no city has ever made. And so I'm hoping, obviously, that it would take people that think with a great vision and spirit. And it could be done, and we could do it. And it would bring, I think, a very beautiful face to Baltimore that might inspire other cities around the country. I have no doubt of that. It would bring the pastors, musical directors, the organ directors, who are really the backbone in many ways of this city. This is may be a city with more churches than any other city in America. I just can't imagine the beauty of it, you know, and I can only imagine.
Baltimore-based poet and composer David Franks discussing his work in progress, Sunday Morning Bells. Franks is currently reaching out to the city's religious communities, politicians, progressive media outlets, and grant-making institutions like the Abel Foundation and the Open Society Institute to make this vision a reality. He'd also love to hear from fellow citizens who share this vision of hope for our city. You can reach him through this program's website, signalradio.org. We'll conclude today's exploration of Frank's creative works with a quote by the artist. Whether he's conducting a fleet of tugboats or harnessing the sounds of frozen tears, harassing someone who's mistakenly dialed his phone number, or planning a musical expression of citywide unity, David Franks says this about his art. What I really want to do is to tell the truth about being alive. For The Signal, I'm Aaron Henkin.